Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In those years you're referring to that we won, we were a team. We were a very tight-knit team. And I didn't see that this year, almost from day one. I didn't see a point where our guys came together as a team. And I wonder if it's because there's too many guys content with where they're at in their careers after winning a couple of Stanley Cups. Is that a signal where some of that has to be changed? Where you got that eagerness again. There's a bunch of things that were different between the Islanders and the Penguins, and the reason, or the Islanders won four straight. They played the right way, and they were eager to win. They were determined, and the Penguins weren't.
Jim Rutherford with some strong words there. Let's get Pierre McGuire's thoughts on the fan hotline brought to you by Armstrong Business. Pierre, are you in Jim's old stomping grounds, Raleigh, tonight?
I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, getting ready Game 6. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Great to be here with you again, and we'll try to do our best here to put a bow on the Penguin season. You just heard Jim Rutherford's comments, Pierre, that there's a complacency that he saw out of some of his multi-time cup-winning stars. Now, you weren't around this team every day, but you were between the benches for Game 3. Did you see any of that in that game?
Well, I didn't see complacency in that game. What I saw is just not the same intensity and will that you need to have in order to win. Now, I think part of that is there were probably some guys nicked up and hurt. Part of that was there was a very real sense after the first two games that this was going to be a tougher opponent than maybe some people thought. And I think part of it was, for whatever reason, the Islanders knew how to get into the Penguins' kitchen. So there were a lot of different things. To say that a whole season can be magnified on one game would be tough. But I would just say this. The Islanders were the better team, and they were clearly the more urgent team. There's no question about it. They had a higher rate of urgency than the Penguins did.
Pierre, whenever I hear a coach or a GM sort of say what Rutherford said about chemistry and about coming together, I always wonder, is that something that gets used as sort of an explanation when things go wrong, like bad chemistry or it didn't come together right, and then suddenly when a team does well, it's, oh yeah, they had great chemistry. Like, it seems to get applied after the fact based on whatever the result is. Is that your experience?
I think that's a fair statement. Usually nobody wants to look at their work and say, you know what, my work wasn't good enough, and there was something else, you know. But the truth of the matter is, there was a disconnect with this team. There wasn't the consistency that you're used to seeing from a Penguin team that we saw in the previous years. Even last year when they got knocked out by Washington, there was still a consistency level to their game. There was an elite level of play that you could witness almost every single night. I don't think you could say that on most nights this year for whatever reason. But you know what? I'm glad that Jim said that because it puts it out there. And I think the players sometimes they just need some tough love. Sometimes they need to get slapped, to recognize that, you know, time's running out. You're not going to have Crosby and Malkin forever. It's just the reality of the situation. Those two guys are elite, elite players, and you're not going to have them forever. That's just how father time works in pro sports. So, you know, you've got to make sure that you take advantage of your opportunities to win whenever you have players like that.
So with that in mind, Pierre, do you think that this team could use a major shakeup roster-wise?
I don't know about major shakeup, but I think they need to get at least one elite top six winger. I think they definitely need to upgrade on defense a little bit. Not a ton, not as much as a lot of the pundits are saying, but a little bit. And Matt Murray's going to have to be far more consistent, especially at the tail end of games. There were too many times this year where the Penguins had leads and they would evaporate or they'd be gone. They would lose the game. The outdoor game in Philadelphia is Exhibit A. And Matt Murray's got to make some of those saves. So, again, guys have to, and this is what I think is so great about what Jim said, now the challenge is put down. We'll see how bad guys want to be Penguins or not. We'll see. And you'll know in training camp next year if these guys really want to be part of the organization or not.
Pierre, do you expect, you said maybe not as much of an overhaul, especially on the back end as some suggest, do you expect at least one of the Penguins' big names to not be here next year?
I don't know. I would tell you guys if I knew. I don't know. I haven't spoken with Jim. I haven't spoken with people on the management side there just because I'm so involved in the playoffs.
Right.
And they're no longer involved in the playoffs, so I want to be fair to them. And I don't like to speculate on that stuff. If I knew, I would tell you. I just don't know just because I haven't been in touch with them because they're no longer playing. That's the hardest part of this time of the year. Everybody in their market wants info. But if you're not dealing with that market, you can't give them info because you're just not in touch with those people.
Pierre, then can you take us as a guy that, you know, has worked in front offices and been on coaching staffs, can you take us through the cost-benefit analysis of trading a guy like Chris Letang?
Well, I don't know if you have to do it at a cost-benefit. You have to do it as where do you see your team trending? Do you think the reward is better if he's gone than if he's with you? What's the compensation coming back? You know, the marketplace needs to be established on a player like that. You don't know what his value is until you put him out there. And I don't know if they're going to put him out there or not in terms of trade. But clearly, there's been a lot of rumor and innuendo going back to even when his career started in Pittsburgh that maybe he was going to get moved. So I don't know, you know, what the marketplace bears for Christopher at this point in his career. I'll tell you one thing. He's a heck of a player. And if he is put to market, there'll be a lot of people that'll be very, very interested in him.
Yeah, I want to, just for context, play for you what he said locker cleanout day. You know, Chris in game four jumped into the play after they got a 1-0 lead pinched, and it came back the other way, and there was a goal that tied the game. So he was asked about that, playing a simpler game, and this was his reaction.
So what do you ask? I don't understand. Like, you don't want me to make mistakes? I'll try that. I'll try that. Next year, I'll try to make no mistakes at all. Maybe next year you're going to say, hey, we're having Chris on our lineup. He doesn't do anything offensively, so now you're going to rip me apart because I don't produce anything. So, you know, like, I totally assume sometimes I make mistakes.
Pierre, you know Chris Letang well. What's your reaction to hearing him talk like that?
That's emotional at the end of a series where they got swept and they didn't expect that to happen. That's just the raw human emotion of being a champion and not ending up at the top of the podium this year. That's what that sounded like to me. I've known him extremely well, going back to when he played in the World Under 18 for Canada, in the World Junior, where he was a captain of a World Junior team that never should have won, and they won because of his leadership in Linköping, or actually that was in Leksand, Sweden. So I've seen all different facets of Christopher. That's just the raw emotion of, you know, having this bitter disappointment of the way their season ended. That's what it sounded like to me.
Pierre, do you feel like Chris Letang has, like, kind of evolved as a player from 5, 7, 8 years ago when he first sort of broke in with the Penguins, when he was part but not a major part, maybe, that 09 team?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's a tremendous point. He definitely has evolved as a player. Now, is there high risk to his game? Yes, there is. But, you know, I can see guys that get into the Hall of Fame, guys like Scott Niedermeyer and Phil Housley, and, you know, they're in the Hall of Fame because they did take that high rate of risk in order to manipulate things offensively for their team. So sometimes there's a little bit of that. Sometimes, though, as a coaching staff, and I'm sure Sergei Gonchar and Jacques Martin talked to Christopher about this, you got to sense danger. There's got to be a time in the game where you need to sense danger. I remember doing game three, and I'm a big Justin Schultz fan. I think the world of him as a person, as a player. He didn't sense danger on the Brock Nelson goal, and that was a major turning point in game three. You got to know some days you got to pinch down, and other days you got to back off. And I think all the defensemen for the Penguins need a little dose of that.
Who was the best guy you ever saw on defense at sensing that, and did you sense with that particular player that it was a continuous process of having a better sense of when danger was afoot?
What a good question. I would say from the Penguins' point of view, it was probably Larry Murphy. Larry was tremendous. You could rely on him in any situation. I'm the guy that put him on the ice more times than not when he was in Pittsburgh. So I'd say Larry. And in the league, Raymond Bourque and Brian Leetch are two names that come to mind. They were both really good offensive players. But they knew at key times in the game that there were times they had to back off. There were times where they had to step on the accelerator. So both those guys were really, really good at sensing that danger situation that we were talking about.
Pierre McGuire, our guest, NHL and NBC, 2-time Stanley Cup champion with the Penguins. Okay, so We talked about adding another top six winger. You mentioned that. Jake Guentzel's not going anywhere. 40-goal score.
Nope.
Just got a new contract. Now, you got Patrick Hornquist, who played on the third line, but they're paying him like a top six guy, Pierre. He gets the contract extension. He's making over $5 million a year. Kessel has a limited no-movement clause. And I don't know. When I heard him talk after the season wrapped up, use the past tense sometimes, I almost felt like he wouldn't be opposed to maybe starting the next chapter of his career someplace else. Where do you come down on Kessel's future with the Penguins?
Don't know the answer to that. Phil's kind of an enigma. Phil can be, you know, the guy that you want at key times in the game offensively to take charge, which he's shown he can do over the years. And there are other times where you're not putting Phil on the ice because you don't trust him defensively. So I don't really know, you know, what the future bears for him in Pittsburgh. But I would say this, is Phil really cares. I think that's the one thing that's misunderstood about Phil. Phil really cares, and nobody's harder on Phil than Phil, to the point where I worry about him being so hard on himself. He's so demanding on himself that, you know, you can get down on him and mad at him, but I can tell you one thing, none of that, it all pales in comparison to what he does to himself. Maybe it would be better for him to start in a different place. I don't know the answer to that just because I'm not with him every single day. But though you talked about Hornquist, here's the one thing people need to remember about Patrick. In Sidney Crosby's draft year, Sidney went number one. Patrick Hornquist went 230th. He was Mr. Irrelevant in that draft. He was the last player picked in that draft. He has overachieved to the point where, man, that guy should be so proud of everything he's accomplished in his career. And he's a fortified player. He's a tough, hard-nosed guy. But at some point, the wheels do fall off on those players. And usually the guys that have to overachieve the most, those guys, the wheels fall off a little bit sooner. I'm not saying they've fallen off on him, but to say that he's an everyday top six forward, I think would be a reach.
Well, Pierre, that kind of goes to what I was going to ask you about Hornquist. I think about a guy that plays his style of game, that's in front of the net taking a beating. I think of the guys, you know, Holmstrom in Detroit that was legendary for it, just an agitator too. And I feel like being at ice level would give you a much better sense on Hornquist and whether he's lost a step or he's the same guy than watching him from 80 feet up. So what do you see at ice level when you see Patrick Hornquist?
He's still the same competitive, hard-nosed player. He's still a guy that really cares passionately about getting in the front of the net. He's not shy at all. You saw what went on with he and Robin Leonard. He's not intimidated by anybody in the league. He's still amazingly passionate about how he interacts with his teammates. He's a true professional. I don't know if he's lost the gear. If he's lost anything, he's maybe lost a half a gear. I don't think he's lost a full gear yet. But, again, this will be a very interesting summer for him in terms of training and being ready. One of the benefits of being knocked out early, it's not always good, but this is one of the benefits. When you do have some older guys on your roster, they can get a lot better rest and they can come back ready, more ready next year, the next season, than they would be if they went really, really deep in the playoffs and they didn't win.
Same vein, Pierre, do you see any erosion in Evgeny Malkin's game?
I didn't see the same intensity level from Evgeny as what I'm used to seeing. There were nights where he wanted to take over the game, and there were other nights when he wanted other people to take over the game. I'm used to seeing an Evgeny Malkin that wants to run the ship. He wants to be the guy. He wants the puck on his stick, and he wants to be the guy. And when he's like that, he's almost as good as anybody in the league. I'm not saying he's better than McDavid. I'm not saying he's better than McKinnon, but he's right up there in the same category, in the same breath. There were nights, too many nights this year where I didn't see that. And so, you know, again, for him, it's going to be a summer of staring in the mirror. We all make mistakes. Not everybody's perfect. And, in fact, nobody's perfect. And I don't know if it was a perfect season for Evgeny.
Pierre, I want to go circle all the way back, although this kind of is a line that runs through everything we've talked about, to Rutherford saying that there was never that coming together moment for his team. Whether he means it or not, because he and Mike Sullivan said, hey, we work fine together, is that in any way or should that be interpreted as at least in part something he's putting on the coach?
I sure hope not. Mike's as good a coach as there is in the league, and his staff is phenomenal. Jacques Martin, Sergei Gonchar, Mark Recchi, Mike Buckley, those guys, they have a very, very professional group. You know, I see all the staffs in the league. I know the ones that are really strong. I know the ones that aren't as strong. That staff's really good, and Mike's the leader of that staff. There's no question. Mike's a really good coach, and the players listen to him. He's in charge. I think there was some frustration for him, too, because he wasn't seeing the same consistency from his group that he was used to seeing in all the other years. But again, this stuff happens over the course of seasons, whether it's injuries, you know, guys don't feel good about one another, whatever. Stuff happens, and sometimes you just have to adjust. I would expect there'll be some adjustments coming from the Penguins in the offseason. I would expect there'll be some pretty substantial adjustment coming from the management office in terms of what they do with their roster. But that's normal when you don't win. And they know the clock is ticking on Crosby and Malkin. They know that, and they want to win as much as they can. And I respect them for that. I really do. I respect the organization for that big time.
Pierre, you referenced Matt Murray earlier in this interview, asking more consistency out of him at the end of the games. He's going to be going into the last year of his contract, and just you've seen so many different styles win in the playoffs this year. You've got Peter Mrazek, you've got Robin Leonard and Grice. I mean, you don't have like a Vezina Trophy candidate goaltender in every situation of the teams that are left playing. So I just wonder, do you think it's smart in today's NHL to pay big money for a goaltender? Like, if they double Murray's salary and give him like $7 million a year, is that the way the NHL is headed? Is that what goaltenders should be getting in today's NHL?
Well, they're pretty important. I mean, Ben Bishop's pretty important to Dallas. Pekka Rinne is really important in Nashville. I know Bishop's winning that series right now, but both of them are important. Marc-Andre Fleury is critically important to the well-being of the Vegas Golden Knights. If Martin Jones doesn't stand on his head last night, we're not talking about San Jose playing. So goalies matter. They still matter. You know, I would give you an example. Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be a free agent when the Columbus Blue Jackets season is over. And Andrei Vasilevsky is a Vezina Trophy nominee. I can just tell you right now, during the regular season, it wasn't even close. Vasilevsky was a much better goalie than Bobrovsky. He just was. He was much better. He's the best goalie in the league. He just got knocked out in four games. So it's more, you need the goalie. If you don't have the goalie, it's going to be a problem. And Vasilevsky, to his credit, down in Tampa, and the debrief at the end of the year, said, this is on me. I wasn't good enough. You need goalies. If you don't have good goalies, you're not winning. I don't care what anybody tells you.
Pierre, very quickly, and it's because maybe between us on the show, there is some serious interest in who wins some of these series. I'll just put it to that kind of effect. Who do you think has the edge? I'm not going to tell you who I have here, but who has the edge in the following series that are knotted at three? Toronto, Boston, and Vegas, San Jose.
Boston going home has an advantage. They did Game 7 last year in that series, and they fell behind in Game 7, but they never looked uncomfortable. It should be the best game they play in the entire series. Usually momentum doesn't carry from game to game in the playoffs, and this series is a perfect example of it, but I would say Boston's got the advantage just going home. In terms of Vegas and San Jose, I'd say Vegas. Vegas should have won last night. They didn't. But here's the one caveat to everything I just said. Not always, but usually, if you lose a multiple period overtime game, not always, but usually it's very, very tough to bounce back from that.
Even though he's busy covering and being a part of NBC broadcast during the Stanley Cup playoffs, does Pierre McGuire get into the NFL draft?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. You just played a soundbite from a real good friend of mine. The general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers is just an awesome guy, Kevin Colbert. I'm the biggest fan of that man. He is a professional. He is a hard worker. He's industrious. He gets team building. I love everything about him, and he's a great friend, very, very, very loyal friend.
Kevin and I went to the same high school, so you can't win them all, I guess.
So I got to tell you this quick story.
Go ahead.
I played football, hockey, and baseball at Hobart College in Geneva, New York. And about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I get a call from Kevin. I thought he wanted tickets to come to a Penguins game. I was doing a Penguins game later in the week. And he goes, no, I got a question to ask you, Pierre. I go, sure, what's up? He goes, have you ever heard of a guy named Ali Marpat? I said, yeah, he goes to my alma mater. He's a great lineman. He's probably the best football player that ever played at that school. He goes, could you do some searching around on him for me? I said, absolutely. So I called my old coach who works up at Hobart, and he's retired now, Jack Daniels. We just had his, I think, 75th or 76th birthday party. I was up there for that. And I talked to Coach Daniels, and he gave me the rundown. He says, you couldn't find a better guy. And I think Ali Marpat's the earliest Division III football player ever picked.
That's right.
He's a starter. He's a starter for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Kevin was on him before anybody else. I'm just telling you. So I love the draft. I think the draft's awesome in all sports, but especially football and hockey.
The coach's name is Jack Daniels? That's a Hall of Fame name. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
That is incredible.
Oh, and he never imbibes in his namesake.
Wow. Art does not imitate life.
Little known fact, Hobart, big time lacrosse school.
It was huge. When I was there, four times in a row, they won the national championship. All those guys I played football with, they play lacrosse in the spring. I played baseball because I was tired after hockey.
Pierre, you don't know how much fun it is to talk to you once a week. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, man.
You guys are awesome. It's a pleasure to talk to you guys, and I look forward to talking in the next couple weeks.
You bet. Pierre McGuire, NHL on NBC.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.